Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, Tommy, we've already talked about this one topic a little bit before, but with some things that were in the news, I thought that it'd be kind of a fun thing to bring back up.
What's that? They're all fun, Mike, when you bring them up.
Oh, well, thanks a lot. I appreciate that. It's defamation.
Defamation?
Yeah.
Not to be confused with defecation.
That's right.
Two entirely different things. They come out opposite ends.
But usually defamation cases are the defecation of cases, in my opinion.
Oh, no. Well, now what I remember from that when we talked about libel and slander and basically defamation is that it's hard to win damages in those cases.
It is true, because even if you show something that was said was maybe false or negligently false, really it's, you know, did it actually hurt you? And if so, How do you prove how much? Yeah, how do you prove those damages?
It hurt a lot. I need a lot of money to ease my pain and suffering.
That old adage, sticks and stones may
break your bones.
That's all I got. That's it, folks. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never harm me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's something to be said for that.
When we were talking about baking your bones.
Baking your bones.
Yeah. That made me think, did you see that there was a... some kind of pot grower out in California that bought an entire town so they can turn the whole town into recreational pot production?
No.
Yeah. They bought the entire town.
Was it like a ghost town or is it just an actual town?
It was an actual town. It just wasn't very big.
Hmm.
But they are going to be a party capital, I will assume.
Also, it's going to be, people can come there for like vacation and stuff. And it's just like,
yeah, the entire town will be. Yeah.
Oh, it's like Disneyland or Disney World for people that like marijuana.
Yeah. Be like High Town or something. I'm not sure what they'll call it.
Six bongs over California.
Yeah. Potpourri.
Yeah, I'm really struggling here trying to get more punny amusement park names. Well, you got Cedar Point. What could you say Cedar Point? You could say
Cedar Joint.
Cedar Joint. There you go. I knew if we just kept thinking, we'd eventually come across one. Hey, man, you want to go to Cedar Joint?
Camden Dank.
They're just rolling now.
Yeah, we're rolling now. This joint is rolling.
So the back to the defamation topic. I don't know how we got on marijuana.
Well, you crossed up your words there and went with bake your bones instead of break your bones. And then that bake made me think of being baked. And then being baked made me think of this story I read about the town turning into a pot town. So. That's the way my evil brain works.
The way your mind works is truly astonishing.
It just those things link together for me. I don't know.
I mean, hearing you say it, I can kind of follow it, but I never would have gotten there. As I said, though, defamation cases are usually, in my opinion, pretty worthless because there's not, even though you might win, it's like, what do you really win? And
an apology?
Think, yeah. Well, even then. I mean, court can't make somebody do something, can't make you give an apology.
Tell him you're sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay.
Sorry I called you a poo-poo.
Case dismissed.
Sorry I called you a poo-poo head. The elements of defamation, though, generally the plaintiff must prove that the defendant made some sort of false and defamatory statement about the plaintiff, and they have to show that the defendant made some sort of publication to a third party, and they have to show that they acted negligently in publishing that communication. And again, in some circumstances, they have to show damages.
So what would really bring this to life is if there were true life examples of such things occurring and how they're handled.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's not any new cases or anything like that. So that's the end of this podcast. Thanks for listening.
What? Wait a minute. I thought I heard something.
No, there's been a lot of actually defamation cases in the news, oddly enough.
That's where I thought we were going.
They're actually in the news quite a bit. In real practice, they're horrible.
They're horrible.
You can tell I'm kind of biased about defamation cases.
Yeah. Well, as people always, you know, get all upset about something that somebody said and they want to sue them. But it's like you say, you can't prove real damages.
I know. Well, I guess it's probably because people come to my office and say, like, so-and-so called me a name and I want to sue him. And I just look at them like, really?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Grow up.
I mean, now sometimes there might be actual merit to it, but, you know, for the most part, a lot of times it's just hurt feelings.
I can see that probably happens a lot, like if couples are splitting up or something, that one or the other would use that tactic. Oh, they said something bad about me, or, you know, said I was a bad husband, or said I was a bad wife or mother or whatever else, and they try to go at that angle or something.
Yeah, you can see that in that kind of scope.
And especially when you have Facebook and stuff like that, social media.
Oh, yeah.
People say something on that, and then they say, look, they published it to the world. Look, they defamed me.
Domestic and divorce attorneys use Facebook a lot because people are always constantly putting stuff on their Facebook, and nobody ever really locks that stuff down. They keep their settings wide open.
And if you're the friend of a friend of a friend of a friend, they can get to you.
Yeah, unless you close your settings down, which is what you should do.
Yeah, but most people don't.
No, they don't.
They want everybody to see what they think.
Now, there are some circumstances.
Or what they're eating.
There are some circumstances when you don't actually have to prove monetary damages in a defamation case. And this is in a case of defamation per se. And the elements of those are, well, not the elements, but those specific categories are if it's been a crime of moral turpitude, a loathsome disease, conduct that would adversely affect one's business or profession, or unchastity.
Hmm.
So those are the basic ones there where you don't have to actually prove any damages. So now in the news lately, we've had a couple cases. The first being John Oliver.
John Oliver.
Our old friend at HBO.
Yes. I'm aware of him. I watch his shows from time to time. It's fairly amusing.
He is pretty good. I think we've talked about him on our podcast before.
Well, he came out with, after we did our episode on seizures, federal seizures and all that, that he came out and spoke against it.
I think his actually may have been before ours.
Was it?
Yeah.
I'd like to think we were first.
Well,
that's the way I'd like to rewrite this story.
You can think that.
Okay. Thank you. I rest my case.
Well, he was recently sued because he discussed Bob Murray of the Ohio-based Murray Energy Corporation on his television show a couple weeks ago.
And apparently Bob does not have a sense of humor.
No, he does not. Apparently so.
He might sue me for saying that.
He might sue us for saying he doesn't have a sense of humor. If you haven't watched the clip yet, you should. It's pretty funny. They have like some clips of Bob Murray that actually where they show him talking and things like that on the clip. It's pretty funny.
It is pretty funny. It has a picture of him held up next to Dr. Evil.
Yeah.
And he looks amazingly like him, even down to the pinky ring.
That's true. So the complaint, which was filed by Murray, it makes allegations stating that Murray doesn't have a forum to basically respond to what John Oliver said, first of all. And that's part of the reason why he had to file the lawsuit. This is despite the fact that he was on Fox News the next day and also put out a press release about the whole issue as well. So,
but he doesn't have the same forum because he doesn't have a satirical comedy show.
That's true. He doesn't have a satirical comedy show, but he does have an adequate means to respond to it, I would suggest.
Well, that's true. And the other thing is, you just don't want to upset people in the press because they're always going to have the upper hand.
Yeah, that's true.
They can say whatever they want, basically.
And they can get a lot out there pretty quick too.
Mm-hmm.
He said basically, this is one of the funny things too, in his complaint, that nothing else in his life has stressed him out as much as this whole thing that happened with John Oliver. One media outlet said basically, is he really saying that a late night British comedian on a premium channel has caused him more stress than the one time one of his minds collapsed and killed a group of his employees? If so, that's pretty weird. And that was by somebody named Mike Masnick.
That's beyond weird.
Yeah. I think it's being slightly hyperbolic to suggest that this has caused him more stress than anything else in his life. But who knows? So there's an amicus brief, which was written by the ACLU of West Virginia.
And it's hilarious.
Yes, it is absolutely hilarious. Did you read it?
Yeah, I read the whole thing from start to finish there, and I like the way they refer to him as Bob through the whole thing.
One of the headings, actually, subpart three, is basically, anyone can legally say, eat shit, Bob.
That's a point in the brief.
Yeah.
It's labeled there as point Roman numeral three.
Yeah.
Anyone can say, eat shit, Bob.
It's really funny, and actually I want to upload a PDF of it to our Facebook page so everybody can have a chance to find it and read it. It's actually on the ACLU's webpage as well. So. Oh,
well, I was going to say, it's on our Facebook page.
Is it on our Facebook page?
Yeah.
The actual brief itself?
Yeah, I think that's where I saw it.
Oh, maybe it is.
Yeah, I might put it on there.
There's different articles and stuff. Sometimes it links it to it. I was going to put up the PDF of it, but if it's already up there, hey,
yeah.
It's already up there.
Yeah. If I had my Facebook, I'd pull it up and tell you who did it.
The amicus brief also basically says, as you had said, Murray took exception to being compared to Dr. Evil from Austin Powers, which is pretty funny. And the brief itself actually goes into it on page 7. And to me, this is my favorite part of the entire brief. And there's two pictures of Murray and Dr. Evil side by side. And then there's a lengthy footnote at the end of that page, which discusses those resemblances. So it's pretty funny.
Well, and what it's saying basically is it's offering that the truth is a defense against defamation. And they're saying, look at the picture. And here's how they're the same as well. And it talked about how Dr. Evil was going to sue or something for a billion giggity dollars or something like that. And at one point, Bob Murray made the same comment. I'm going to sue for $1 billion or something along those lines.
Yeah, it's really funny. I really wish, that I had an opportunity to write something so satirical in my profession as an attorney, but I don't think
you have to
happen.
Work for the ACLU. They probably get that opportunity a lot.
I don't know. I mean, this is probably those once in a lifetime type things that comes along.
You think?
Yeah. I mean, whenever I was a clerk for a judge and I get to write the orders, I could insert a little bit of humor in there, but it was not much.
Well, I think one of the things that struck me the most about it is they either phoned him or sent him something where they wanted his response prior to them airing this piece.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically sent him the substance of it and said, this is what we're going to put out there. Do you have anything to say to it? And they sent him back. They sent back HBO a document, a cease and desist document,
mm-hmm.
saying you cannot air this. If you do, we will sue you for defamation, And so they wanted this cease and desist order issued saying that the episode couldn't air.
Yeah.
Well, that's at the very heart of freedom of speech. I don't like what this person's saying, so we want the court to not let him say it. Freedom of speech doesn't mean you have to agree with everything they say, and it doesn't have to be nice, and it can say things that maybe aren't even true.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. You have, in the course of the matter of public record, you can set it straight, but it doesn't mean that people can't say it.
I think, in general, narcissistic, rich a-holes generally don't like it when you say bad things about them, and they tend to want to use their means to try to quell your free speech. That's my take on it.
They had Don Blankenship in that same episode. They mentioned him in there. And about some of his stuff and his giving his speech during, I don't know, it was a 4th of July thing or something. He was in his red, white, and blue outfit.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how minor safety and health was of utmost concern to them. And then that was right before the disaster that they had where 29 minors were killed.
Yeah. He ended up going to jail for that.
Right. Yeah. And so since he's been out, he's trying to get the legislature to rewrite the laws so that coal executives cannot be held criminally liable.
Yeah, that's what we need.
Yeah, yeah, because that was so unfair the way he was treated.
Well, he put out
a club fed for a year.
Do you remember that thing that he put out, the booklet, about a year ago? It was about this time last year it came out. He mailed it to all the different places here in West Virginia.
He made a video, too. He made some kind of movie, a short movie or documentary or something about that, about how it had nothing to do with any of their practices, that they were completely not responsible for it.
Yeah. Well, you would think he was just the most persecuted human being on the planet. He was some kind of martyr after you read that book.
It's right.
Ridiculous. Have you ever seen that documentary? It's called Blood on the Mountain.
No.
It's really good. It talks a lot about coal miners and coal mining issues here in West Virginia. And it's pretty critical of the whole industry itself and mainly the top level executives and how they they don't treat the workers fairly. It's called Blood on the Mountain. It's on, actually it's on Netflix right now. It's really good.
Yeah, there was another one of the CEOs from like Alpha Resources or something like that, I think it was, and they had filed bankruptcy, and the guy was talking about how terrible it was to have to inform the the miners of that, and knowing that they go home to their families and say they don't have a job and everything. And at the same time, the same guy, they filed an action where they wouldn't have to pay health and medical benefits for like 1,200 miners that had been laid off. And in the same one, because they were under bankruptcy, so they have to file and ask for these things. And in the same one, they're asking not to pay those benefits. They're also asking for the ability to pay a $15 million bonus to the top executives that are there, including himself.
Well, hopefully the trustee did not allow that for the bankers.
I hope not, too. But they didn't say whether that was allowed or not. But when the guy gets on there and talks about how much he cares, and he even got choked up talking about it. And then they show where they file this a few months later so they can get their $15 million bonus.
I get choked up over $15 million, too.
Yeah, yeah, I could, too. I could choke somebody up over it.
Yeah, well, we could probably do a whole episode on the coal industry itself.
Well, this is true.
But this episode's about defamation, and that was just another one of those kind of silly defamation cases that people file. So
one of the points they made on there about, you know, that the point was they were trying to say is that, you know, you got to be moving towards renewable energy and stuff like that. And one of the best examples was in Kentucky, they have their History of Coal Museum.
Yeah.
And it was in the process of converting over to solar power.
Yeah, I saw that. They're talking about how much money it's going to save them over the long run. Yeah,
converting to solar from coal powered plant.
Like, if that's not a slap in the face, I don't know what is.
The coal museum. Yeah, that's very ironic, I guess.
Yeah, I think if you actually looked up irony in the dictionary, you would see a picture of the Kentucky Coal Museum being powered by solar-powered panels. There's actually one defamation case, though, that I guess there was a jury verdict in it recently. The plaintiff actually succeeded in it, and it was such a strange case that because – usually you don't get damages like that. That I thought it'd be interesting to talk about, too, to kind of contrast it with the other one.
Well, I agree, because you don't get many examples of ones that actually work.
Yeah. Well, this one, there was a Dallas wedding photographer, and she sued a newlywed couple for defamation and received a verdict for $1.08 million for defamatory, disparaging, and malicious statements. So what had happened, the couple had hired this prominent Dallas wedding photographer to shoot some engagement photos and shoot their wedding ceremony for them. She was a pretty successful wedding photographer, and she basically said in her complaint that she had business every single weekend for the past 10 years in the Dallas area. So she's, you know, out there, that's her career, and she's making pretty good money doing it probably. She's out there every weekend doing it.
Right.
So she had a contract, and in that contract it states that after the ceremony, she will send them proofs of the photos she took, and then the client must put in an order for an album that cost $125 if they want to get any of the pictures at all. So that was in the contract, and they agreed to it, which I can understand that. It makes sense that, you know, if you're going to go through the trouble of processing all these pictures and things like that, and somebody wants one, that you want them to have this album as well. So the bride requested some high-res photos of the event, but she didn't order an album, and so she got pretty upset about that and started getting into an argument with the wedding photographer about it, to the point where the wedding photographer actually even agreed, said, you know what, don't worry about it, I'll waive it, just order the pictures, whatever. Well, the bride, who was also a fashion and beauty blogger and had written some articles for the Huffington Post, was not satisfied with that with that response and that outcome.
She wanted her pound of flesh.
She did. She went on the news, she went on social media, she was on Facebook.
She blogged about it.
Yeah, I mean, she put it out there basically that she...
That this lady was a thief.
And, yeah, she was holding her pictures hostage.
Yeah, hold them hostage and fraudulent practices, trying to gouge her for $125. Well, you know, if you've ever paid for a wedding, $125 is the least of anything that you're going to pay for in that wedding. I mean, you know, the candles cost more than that.
Well, these are special wedding candles. They cost way more.
Right. Yeah, the tablecloths are more than that. You're just renting them, you know?
Yeah.
At $125, and that's what you're going to get upset about? What was the cost of the whole wedding? You know, it's probably like a $50,000 wedding or something like that. And you're going to get upset over $125, and that's going to be the issue you're going to go to, you know, you're going to go to the hill with?
Well, I understand where the photographer's coming from, too, because once you send somebody the pictures and then you expect payment later on, it's going to be a lot harder to get that money later on.
Right.
There's I mean, I've had that happen to me several times where I've done work and then somebody's like, well, yeah, I'll pay after you finish it. You know, I try to avoid doing that, but in certain circumstances, if time's of the essence and I get a good feeling for the person, then I'll be like, well, okay, I'll go ahead and just, you know, I'll go ahead and work on it now. Send me a check and we'll get it started. And usually I have a pretty good feeling about people and I can read them and not get tooken.
We do the same thing with ours. Most of ours, we bill on net 30, but there's certain things that we do that it's the only time we're going to see that person. It's a one-time job, and that's the only time we're going to see them. So once we take their boxes of records for shredding or whatever and give them a bill, if they disappear, we're stuck with those boxes of records. We either just shred them for free or we hang on to them. Either way, we're stuck with them. We can't get rid of them. I mean, it's like they just gave you herpes.
I don't want your legal herpes. The one that comes to mind for me, this should have been a red flag, is the person was being sued for actually owing money. It should be a red flag right there.
Yeah, I would think so. This guy doesn't pay his bills. Do you take IOUs?
Take third-party post-dated checks? There's a saying in the lawyer world that you don't start work till Mr. Green makes an appearance in the case.
Yeah.
So it's, you know what that means, right?
The money.
Yeah, Mr. Green.
I didn't think you were talking about Mr. Green jeans.
There's also another one that says Mr. Green needs to meet Mr. Brown. So Mr. Green, the money, needs to meet Mr. Brown, the desk. Before you start work.
Oh, so, okay. I wasn't sure. Mr. Brown sounded a little bit like Mr. Hankey. I wasn't sure where we were going with that.
Howdy-ho. So, I understand where she's coming from. She wants payment first before she does the work on these things.
And sure.
After you give somebody the pictures, they're probably not going to pay her, especially after they already shelled out all this money for the wedding to begin with.
That's right.
So.
Yeah, so you can't blame her for that, and especially if she signed a contract. That's what I don't understand. Why would the lady turn around and waive the $125 at all? If the people signed a contract for it, it's right there in the contract in black and white. You're not going to get out of it anyway.
Well, I mean, probably the lady tried to flex her social media muscle and say, hey, I'm gonna tell everybody what a horrible person you are, blah, blah, blah. And the lady was like, well, you know what? I know even though you agree to it, legally you're bound to it. Don't even worry about $125.
It's not worth the trouble.
It's not worth the trouble. So, but it didn't matter to this blogger, and she went on Wedding Wire, which is a site where couples use to find wedding vendors, and left multiple one-star reviews on Yelp. And also, like I said, they were on TV as well. And so the lawsuit basically alleged that their defamation campaign destroyed her business. And the photographer said that by her going out to the multiple news outlets and the viral news story caused her to have to close her studio, and that she had not photographed a wedding in almost 2 years.
Wow.
So completely devastated her business by all these statements. Mm. So the bride, she has a pretty big Twitter following too. I looked, it was like 15,000 people. So, I mean, she's, you know, not huge, but enough where it could probably
affect her in that area.
Well, and obviously it looks like it did. So,
yeah.
I think probably one of the things that this case probably turned on was the fact that,
well, they could prove some damages.
Yeah, well, she could. Number one, she could prove damages. She could show the drop in her business. Mm-hmm. And I think it's not too far of a leap to show that these negative reviews and whatnot are causally related to the damages. That, in addition to the fact that she agreed to waive the $125, I mean, that just shows, I think, just real bad faith on behalf of the bride doing that, in my mind.
Well, let me take devil's advocate on that. She's in effect breaking her own contract by doing that. Is she showing some type of guilt or fault by doing that? I mean, I, as far as I'm concerned, she should have stuck to it, you know?
Well, but here's what I think it probably, if I had to guess what took place, is that the bride went on the news and put all these things, like says, well, she's going to make us pay $125 to even get copies of our photos. We paid her to be there. And yet she's going to charge us $125. Well, the photographer can say, hey, that's in the contract, but I agreed to even waive that. So basically, she's lying and making false statements by saying that she has to pay the $125 to see her photos at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So even that's my whole point.
She was just on a vendetta after that.
Yeah.
Because her point was $125 was unfair.
Yeah.
Once the lady waived that, she had no longer had a point, but the lady continued.
Yeah.
To still defame her.
Yeah, and say basically like she's holding our photos hostage and all this stuff.
So. Man, I bet I know what TV show that lady was on.
What show?
Bridezilla's.
She might have been.
Sounds like she's a bridezilla.
I don't know, and I'm not gonna say anything about her because next thing you know, we'll have all kinds of 1-star reviews on our podcast.
Well, at least she wasn't as bad as that one bride that I read about last week.
Which one was that?
Said that I want to say it was in Tennessee, and that the couple got married, and I think they had, you know, as you some often do, there were drinks at the reception and everything, and apparently the bride got a little bit tipsy, and then her and the groom got in an argument. She pulled a gun out from her wedding dress and started shooting, held it up to his head and pulled the trigger, but it didn't fire. So then she had to go and load the gun and came back and started shooting into the air.
Good Lord.
That's on the wedding night. I don't think that marriage is going to last. You're going downhill from there.
Yeah. Man, I thought my marriage was bad.
Which one?
Just keep driving the nail in there.
Just keep hammering.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I know that basically weddings in particular, there are quite a few contracts that people sign whenever they arrange to have a wedding ceremony because of all the vendors and whatnot for the reception.
Right.
Photographers, things like that. I had one guy, the bride's father, he actually hired me, I guess almost to be like a wedding attorney, where he hired me to review all the contracts for him that he had to look at for all the different things that were going on.
Wow.
Because it was he's like, you know what? He goes, I'm spending a lot of money on this wedding. I'm signing a lot of contracts. He goes, I'm not an attorney. He goes, I want an attorney to look at all these contracts. So he paid me to actually review the contracts so he could pay somebody else to do all the stuff. It's pretty funny. So weddings are an expensive ordeal.
Yeah, but they're not worth that.
No.
What that lady did, that was ridiculous. Once she got him to waive the $125 fee, she should have been satisfied.
Yeah, I would agree.
And she should have spoken to the quality of the photos, too. I mean, if they were good quality photos, then...
Well, I imagine the lady must have done a pretty good job if she'd been in business for 10 years and had been that busy. Busy every weekend.
Yeah. But that's, like I say, that's where she could show markedly, here's what I've done, and, you know, here's the list of ones that I did, and now here's what I've had in the last year.
Yeah.
And show the drop off. So
yeah. I mean you can easily look at that case and juxtapose that against a case where like your neighbor tells another neighbor, oh, I don't like Tommy.
He's a real a-hole. Well, we said shit earlier, but that was a direct quote.
Oh,
from a brief.
Yeah, I think it's okay if you do that, right?
Yeah, as long as we did air quotes when we said it. So it wasn't us, it was the brief.
Yeah.
Our briefs talking.
You're talking out of your butt again.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so if somebody says to some third party, says, well, Tommy, he's a real a-hole. He does this or he does that. Even if it's something that's not even true. But what are your actual damages going to be from that?
Yeah, you can't prove any monetary damages.
No.
And my neighbors don't come park in front of my house anymore.
Yeah. That's a big one. People like to complain about people parking in front of their house.
Yeah.
Or turning around in their driveway. I never understood that.
Yeah, they don't want people. No turning. I've seen signs up. People have signs up. No turning in driveway. What? And you live at the end of a dead-end road. What are people supposed to do?
I don't know.
It makes it difficult. It's somebody else's problem. Hey, I know of one other example of a farmer that had to jump in and protect himself from defamation.
When's that?
Well, it seems that there was this traveling salesman, and he was looking for a place to stay.
Okay.
And he came across this farmer who lived alone. So the farmer said, sure, I'll put you up for the night. So he invited him in. He said he fixed him dinner, and they had dinner. Well, he said, would you like to see the farm? He said, well, sure. So the farmer took the traveling salesman out, and the traveling salesman happened to be an amateur ventriloquist. So he decided to have a little bit of fun with the farmer. So as they were walking along, they walked by, and here was a cow. The traveling salesman walked up and he said, "Well, hello there, Miss Cow. What's your name and what do you do?" And doing his ventriloquism without the farmer's knowledge, he goes, "Well, hello, my name's Bessie. I give milk and service the bull." The farmer just looked dumbfounded and said, "I've had that cow 5 years and I've never heard it say a word." The salesman said, "Well, I just have a way with animals." So they walked on down to the next one and came to the chicken. And so the traveling salesman walked up to the chicken and said, "Well, hello there, chicken. What's your name and what do you do?" And the chicken said, "Well, I'm Miss Cluck Cluck, and I lay eggs for the farmer, and I service the rooster." And the farmer stood looking aghast again, and he said, "Well, I've had that chicken 10 years and never heard so much as a peep out of it. I can't believe it can talk." So they come walking along, and the next one they come to is a sheep. And the traveling salesman went up, and he said, "Well, hello there, Miss Sheep. What?" And before he could say anything else, the farmer interrupted him, jumped in, grabbed the sheep, clamped his hand over his mouth, and said, "Don't listen to a word this sheep says. Everybody knows she's the lionest bitch in the county." So you see, he was afraid that sheep was going to defame him, and he had to jump in and take matters in his own hands.
Yeah. Stop the sheep from defaming him preemptively.
That's right. It's a preemptive defaming.
I didn't really think about that joke as a defamation case, but I guess it could be.
Well, there's several actions taking place there.
Yeah.
Dates back to Pig Boy.
It does.
Really gets your goat, doesn't it? We had a guy when I was in the trainee program with the railroad. We had a guy from Montana, and we used to kid him about what people do with sheeps. And he said, he always just said, "Oh, that's they just say those things. They just say those things." And one day he started telling us in detail how they actually go about it. He said, "You got to wear boots that come up to your knees that are lace-up boots to accomplish this feat." And we're like, wait a minute, you have far too many details here to be speaking in generalities. What are you saying? He defamed himself. Never mind, this is getting in way too much detail. We're gonna just have to edit that whole part out.
Oh, so you put the boots on yourself and then?
Yes.
Oh
yes,
that's disgusting.
Yes, it is. But the fact that he knew this detail was like, wait a minute, why do you know this? That's a thought it never occurred to any of us.
Yeah, and this is before the internet, too, so you can't even say I saw it on the internet.
No. Yeah, you could see that easily on the internet. Probably 8-year-olds know about it now, but at the time, you know, I was a mid-20s, and it shocked me.
That does shock the conscience.
Yeah, now whenever I see somebody in Montana wearing lace-up boots, I say, uh-huh, I know what you're up to, feller.
Does that happen often?
I guess. I don't know.
Well, there was another defamation case, too, where the plaintiff actually won some money recently, and that, well, it's not actually, I guess it didn't go to a verdict, it was a settlement. But basically, ABC had reached a settlement with a South Dakota meat producer for a defamation case, and...
ABC and a South Dakota meat producer?
Yeah. There's a company called Beef Products, Inc. in South Dakota, and they said that basically ABC News misled consumers about the safety of low-cost processed beef trimmings, which are officially known as lean, finely textured beef. But they the common term people calls pink slime.
Pink slime. Yep. I heard about the pink
because
slime.
Of the appearance. The company was seeking $1.9 billion in damages. They estimated the figure could have grown to as much as 5.7 under South Dakota law.
Was that based on their loss of revenue, they thought, because of the sale of pink slime?
Yeah, and basically, the pink slime is commonly sold in grocery stores and used in schools and fast food restaurants, and the public backlash from it basically made their sales plummet, and they had to close 3 of their plants and laid off about 700 workers.
Wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was pretty much a catastrophic thing for their business. And
but the gist of the report was that pink slime is bad for you?
Yeah, and also that it was contaminated and just that basically it wasn't safe to eat.
And are they saying now that it is safe to eat and that we should have more in our diet?
No, they're absolutely not saying you need more pink slime in your diet. And they actually didn't even issue an apology or anything like that. And the episode is still on their webpage, too. So, but basically, there was some sort of settlement, and we don't know what it was because it's confidential. But essentially what happened was is that the beef products said they were happy with the settlement, and that's going to be a strong foundation with which to grow their business. So...
So they're still in business selling pink slime, so it's still where it was. So that then should we term the ABC News report as a false report?
I don't know.
I mean, how can they both be right?
Well, when it's settled, we're not going to know who's right because it's basically just made it go away. But the beef company said that by the settlement that it establishes what we all know to be true about lean, finely textured beef. It is beef. It is safe. It is wholesome and nutritious.
Lean, finely textured beef. Yep. That's a big difference. If you said, would you like some lean, finely textured beef? Sure, that sounds pretty good. If you asked me, would you like some pink slime? No, I don't think so.
Nah, I'm
good.
Nah, dog, I'm good. I don't think I want that.
I'm good. What's the daily USDA requirements for pink slime?
I don't know. It's funny, too. You know, these cases we all talked about, these were U.S. cases. But there are a lot of variants across the world, essentially. I know in Europe... Across the pond. You see a lot of defamation cases where tabloids are sued and the celebrities get a lot of money from them. So you don't hear about that more overseas, generally. There's actually a case in Australia where Rebel Wilson sued a magazine publisher, basically saying that the articles they published in there, that she was lying about her age and where she was brought up and things like that, that essentially what it did was it led to her not getting some roles she would have normally gotten, but they had they not published that. So if you think about it, that's quite a bit of a reach from the damages we're talking about, which you can actually show through loss of revenue, things like that.
Right.
Different than saying like, well, I was up for this one role, but they didn't call me back. And I think it's because of what you said. So it's a little bit different standard. Mm-hmm. And I think generally overseas, the standards for defamation is quite a bit lower.
Well, they have several things that are different. I want to say that in England, they have like a law about photoshopping pictures or something like that.
Oh, really?
If you if somebody does it in the line of beauty products and they photoshop the picture to make it look better than it really is, and you determine that the picture was photoshopped, I believe that they're liable for... false advertising or something along those lines. There's a rule specific to that.
And that's overseas somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, I think in the U.S. you can do that. It's just called puffery.
Yeah. There's a lot of puffery, HR puffery going on. But over there, if you've got ones like that, when they Photoshop the thigh gap or whatever it is, that they can be liable for that.
Photoshop the thigh gap.
Yeah, something like that. Or the muffin top. Or the dad bod.
The dad bod?
Yeah.
The dad bod's in vogue, though, I thought.
Well, that depends on who you ask, I'd say.
Yeah, you're probably right about that one. Well, I think if you can take one thing from defamation cases, especially if you're here in the U.S. With regards to defamation cases, it's that you got to show some sort of damages from it, unless it falls into one of those kind of categories that we talked about previously. If you go around saying like someone, well, you did mention herpes earlier. If you go around saying someone has herpes, that's defamation per se, and you don't have to show damages because that's a loathsome disease.
Right.
So that's one of those exceptions. There's certain things that you just say that are so bad, you don't have to show damages because we know they're out there. So.
That's a loathsome disease.
He said he was a degenerate with a loathsome disease.
Well, he needs some money for that.
Yep.
I don't think they have defamation in Australia.
They don't?
Those guys are too tough. You couldn't hurt any of them with just words.
Well, that Rebel Wilson case was from Australia.
Well, she's not Australian, is she? I thought she was English.
No, I think she grew up in Sydney, I think.
She grew up in Sydney?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think.
You think?
I think.
I thought she was English. I don't have a good enough ear to detect the difference between an Australian and an English accent, I guess. Sometimes I can tell. Just depends.
Rebel Melanie Elizabeth Wilson is an Australian actress, writer, and producer.
Well, see, I just defamed her and said she was born in England.
Is that a defamation?
Yeah. And it just disproved my theory of Australians not having defamation because you said she just won a lawsuit for it and filed for it. And she's Australian. So there it goes. You're all a bunch of Rebel Wilsons. Whatever that means.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
You're all actresses. You're all Australian actresses.
She is pretty funny.
Yeah, I do like her. What a movie is she seeing recently? Oh, Pitch Perfect?
Yeah, 2.
Yeah.
Well, she was in both of them, but Pitch Perfect 2 was more recent.
I saw the ad for the third one, the preview. It looks pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah, her TV show wasn't that good, but her movies are pretty good.
What was her TV show called?
Something like Wild Night Out or something, Women's Night Out or Girls Night Out or something like that. And she had like 3 girlfriends or something, and they were getting into crazy mishaps. It only lasted a season or something like that.
It sounds like a great pitch. Yeah. To go to the
4 girlfriends network. Getting into crazy mishaps.
Yeah, it's like how you describe a Three's Company episode. Oh, it's the one where they get into some sort of misunderstanding.
Yeah. Yes. Well, Mr. Furley.
Yeah, they get into a misunderstanding with Mr. Furley. Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is a part of the show where we go over different legal theories we talked about. And in this episode, we didn't really talk about too many legal theories because we kind of are going back over some topics we already talked about before with defamation.
Oh, but good. So you're just going to pass me?
Just get a check mark?
Yeah.
Or was it not a check mark? Was it a...
Just all I had to do was be present, show up, and win.
Yeah, if you can sign your name on this piece of paper, you can pass it.
There you go.
Well, there's a couple questions I do have.
Okay.
And the ACLU filed something with the court in the John Oliver lawsuit. And what was that called?
It was like America Cersei or something like that.
America Cersei.
Yeah, something like that.
It was an amicus brief.
Amicus brief.
Yep, and yeah. Amicus is Latin, which basically means friend. So basically it's a
friendly brief.
Yeah, like a friend of the court type brief. They think they have an opinion on it that might be beneficial to the court. So they filed this amicus curiae brief and asked the court to accept it and use that as part of their argument as well. So,
I thought it was interesting too. They cited a crap load of other cases when they did that in that brief.
Yeah.
That of other ones to support what they were saying.
Yeah, well, whenever you argue law, you want to put a crap load of cases in there.
Yeah, every point they made is like 3 or 4 or 5 supporting cases that they felt supported what they were saying.
Yeah, in legal writing, whenever you're learning that in law school, they basically say, now, when you make this assertion, you want to support it with a crap load or a buttload of cases. Buttload's actually more the legal term they use in law school.
Is that the legal term?
Yeah.
They use a buttload. Sir, we'd like to submit a buttload.
No, but if you look at that brief itself, you can kind of pull it apart. They usually have like a table of authority at the beginning, and those are the different cases they cite to. And so it was a pretty lengthy table of authority for such a short case.
They call it the buttload table.
Yeah, it's the buttload table.
I would eat from the buffet on that table.
Yeah, get you some pink slime. What is the kind of defamation case where you don't actually have to show any kind of damages?
Per se.
That's right. Defamation per se.
You defame me per se. Now open up your per se and give me some money.
If I ever get a defamation per se case that goes to trial, I'm going to use that in front of the jury. What was that again?
That was defamation per se, and you're guilty, so open up your per se and pay me some money.
Move over, Johnny Cochran.
That's a fancy French way to say purse. Per se.
Oh, I don't think I have anything else for legal briefs.
I done briefed you out.
Yeah, you win today, Tommy.
Brief out, bro.
If you can get a Johnny Cochran level S closing argument with that, then I'll just end on that always.
Hey, did you know? You know, every day is some kind of national day of something or another.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday was National 3 Different Things Day. Do you know what any of the 3 things were?
National Beer Day?
No.
I think that was Friday.
Really?
Yeah.
It wasn't yesterday.
Let's see. I don't know. What is it?
National Mustard Day.
Mm-hmm.
National Disc Golf Day.
Oh.
And National Underwear Day. Now, the only way that I could surmise to celebrate all three of these is to fill your underwear with mustard and put them on and go out and play a round of disc golf.
I don't think that's legal.
That would truly put you in the spirit of the day.
There's so many different holidays. That should become a thing where you start combining all the different holidays into one fest.
Festival. What is that? Festivus for the rest of us?
Yeah, Festivus for the rest of us.
That's about what this is. Well, it's just the greeting card companies. They're making up all these things just so they can sell cards. I mean, happy National Mustard Day.
I don't think there's greeting cards for Mustard Day.
There probably is.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I...